Well, good afternoon, everyone. I'm introducing myself. Hello. Hello. For those of you who are in the back, I believe that they put the handouts on the in the front of the room. So if you want a handout, come on down toward the front of the room. And the people in the front promise not to bite. So that's a good sign. I know it's late in the day, but have you been enjoying the day so far? Me too. But full disclosure, I did get a little bit of a headache because the screen was a little jumpy, and I was so absorbed that I watched it jump during Secretary Hillary Clinton's speech. But it was phenomenal that she went over. I was figuring I was getting my money's worth plus. So hopefully all of you did as well. And were your breakout sessions good? Okay. So I'll do my brief introduction of who I am. I'm Marilyn Nagel. I run my own consulting company. It's called Ready, Aim, Aspire. Up until the end of, up until the end of December, I was the CEO of Watermark. So as I said to someone, I feel like I birthed this baby because this conference was in the planning stage for about a year, and it's delightful to see it to come to life with all of you and share in the joy that this day has been. Prior to that, I was the chief diversity officer at Cisco, and I won't go further than that because it just goes on too long and it could take an hour. And I know you're here for our workshop about building meaningful connections. So there is a little handout. And I will start by setting some context and just let you know, you all heard Brené Brown. Everybody here heard the lunchtime speaker, Brené Brown. So it was very timely for me because she talked about how when we fall down, that can either be something that becomes a secret and keeps gnawing at us, essentially, or it becomes something that we use in a positive way. And there's plenty of handouts, so if you don't see one, pass one to someone who's looking. Help one another. Hand up a handout. So essentially, I'll share a little bit of my story, a little bit of context in terms of what happened to me and why I created this workshop. And my story was that I was about midway through my career, and I was on a career path where I had been identified as the successor to my boss. And it was an unusual thing, but the company where I worked did that. They identified the successor publicly. And so when you're identified, you got to go to these development courses, and everybody knew, and it was nice. It was a very nice thing. My boss left suddenly because her husband got ill, and so I went to meet with the head of HR and asked her, do I need to apply? In my naivete, I thought, well, maybe I don't even need to apply because I'd been named as the successor. And she said, no, you don't. And immediately, I was like, oh, good. And she said, well, which was a big clue, she said, you don't need to apply because you're not going to get the job. Now, I had been a year or so into this development program grooming me for this role publicly. And she said, you're not going to get the job because the people at that level don't see you as a peer. They think you're very aloof. And they said you shouldn't apply. Brené talked about those moments when you know, agony and all of those things. For me, like many women, my first response wasn't anger, but was, as you can imagine, the other one that we go to, tears. And so I kind of hot-footed out of the building before they started flowing freely, because a lot of the people who reported to me knew that I was having this conversation and were, I mean, the good news is they weren't throwing me a congratulations party, but it was almost on that verge. So I I left the building, said, I'm feeling sick, got out of there, went home, let the tears flow, the anger followed, the confusion and everything else. I had been getting great performance reviews, been doing an outstanding job. We were winning these wonderful awards. I was the head of a training organization, and we were winning all these awards, and I was still getting all these great reviews. But in fact, I had not spent any time building my network. Not any. I mean, I built with the group that were one level above, or above that. The only connection that I had above me was the CEO of the company. And this was a very big company. I couldn't very well call him on the phone and say, they're not considering me for this job. It just seemed a little awkward. He was in a different state, and it just didn't seem to be something I could do. So I went back to the head of HR and said, give me more detail. And she said, you never socialize with them. You've not gotten to know them. You haven't cultivated relationships with any of them. You go in and out of meetings with them very expediently. You don't spend any time. You have not cultivated these relationships. Now, at the time, I had probably over 200 people reporting to me, and I knew everything about them. I knew when they had children, when they had gotten married, if someone was ill in their family. So I had cultivated relationships, but they were all beneath me or with my peers. And I thought my work stood for me. I thought that I had been announced that I was this top performer, and I had been announced and all this other stuff. So I thought it wasn't that I thought I was above it. It was that I didn't know that I needed to do it. I thought my work stood for me. I thought it was a meritocracy. I had all that mythology that we enter the workforce with. And I should have known better, because I was at a fairly, a mid-level senior position. So it was a pretty rough lesson for me. I was publicly humiliated, not to the degree that Brené Brown had those emails, although I did get a few weird ones, but no, it wasn't like that. But I did have to do some soul searching. And from that very, very difficult lesson, I realized that I had to change my ways. I realized that I had to overcome my natural social shyness, and I had to put myself out there and cultivate a network that was not a natural thing for me to do. I felt it was opportunistic. I felt it was a little phony. I kind of looked, I didn't look down my nose at these people, but I looked down my nose at the people who spent all their time networking and politicking and working the system instead of doing the work. I was about the work. So I guess I had a little bit of that superiority notion. But I thought I was good because my work was good. I wasn't. So it was a very, very rough lesson, and out of that lesson, I knew that I had to make some serious changes if I wanted my career to continue to flourish. I left the company. I had been being courted by another company, and I kept saying, no, I'm not interested, I'm not interested. When this happened, I said, well, I might be interested. And I left the company, ultimately, and in the next job that I had, which was Cisco, where I was the chief diversity officer later on. I was initially hired to work in the IT department, and it was just one function, but I made it my business. I forced myself to build a network, not just with peers, as I typically did, not just with people who reported to me, as I typically did, but also with people who were influencers in the company and across different functions and across different geographies. So when I was ready for a global role that I wanted to go after at Cisco, I could pick up the phone and say to different people, would you support me in applying for this job? And they all did. And ultimately I took on a global role and ended my career after 11 years with Cisco, for the last 4.5 in a global role. But it was a very tough lesson for me to learn. And out of that lesson, I said, maybe I can do something to help other people women and people who are in underserved communities are at a disadvantage already. The playing field is not level. If we've heard anything today, it's about the challenges that we face. Not that they're insurmountable, but there are additional challenges for women and underserved communities. And so, if nothing else, we need additional tools in our toolkit. And maybe, as I often say, bless you. I do often say bless you, but that's not what I was going to say. But maybe I could share and other people could learn from my pain rather than you have to experience the same kind of scenario that I did. So I created this workshop around building your network. I also came to find out that there are a lot of ways that you can diagnose your network and a lot of ways to look at how to strengthen it and build it, but it really doesn't matter that much, the methodology you use. What matters is that you do it and that you do it in a strategic way and that you take the opportunity to constantly look at it and refresh it. Because your network, when you're an individual contributor at company A, is going to be different to help you in your career growth than your network when you're a senior manager or a vice president, even at the same company. And if you change companies, as most of us do, then your network has to also change and continue to grow if you want it to continue to support you. So I've done a lot of workshops and a lot of public speaking, as one might imagine, both as chief diversity officer and then as the CEO of Watermark. And what I always find interesting is the ahas that people get and the reinforcement for me about these lessons learned. So that's what we're going to share today. That was just setting the context. If you don't have one of these sheets and you want to move up and find one, you can still move back and sit in the back or stay up front with the other folks. It's up to you. But there's a two-sided piece of paper, and there's plenty of them over on this side if you want to pick one up, and then you can sit wherever you'd like. But what we're going to do today is we're going to do a very quick and dirty diagnostic and a few hints around how to look at your network and how to leverage it so that you can, A, avoid the mistake that I made, and B, help build your career through leveraging your network. So the first question I'm going to ask, and this is also participatory, especially late in the day after lunch, and I am not Secretary Clinton or Brené Brown, so I need a little help from all of you. How many of you have gotten a job through someone in your network? Raise your hand. And keep them raised, and everyone just take a look around the room. So I would say that's 85 to 90% of the people in the room have gotten a job, maybe not your current job, but at least one job through someone in your network. Interestingly enough, I kind of think of myself as a fairly smart person. Almost every job in my entire career, I've gotten through someone in my network. I actually got the job at Cisco through a network connection, my Watermark job, and most every other job that I've ever had. I met my husband through a connection in my network. I mean, most of the things that meant the most in my career, though, were network connections. And yet, I never spent any time looking at my network or leveraging it in a strategic way. So you have to think, we're smart people. We've all gotten jobs from our network. But have you spent any time looking at it or building it in a strategic way? And most of the time when I do these workshops, the answer is no. So, and typically this is a 2.5-hour session. We're cutting this down. This is the Reader's, I don't want to say Reader's Digest version because that really dates me in addition to the white hair. So I'm going to say that's the USA Today version, the e-news version of this. So what I'd like you to do, and if you don't have a piece of paper, you can also use one of the notes pages in the program, is, what is your top business goal or career opportunity that you hope to achieve in the next year? Just write it down. And by the way, writing down a career goal or what you hope to achieve in the next year gives you a 17% lift of having it actually happen. So no harm, no foul. Write down what you'd like as a career goal in the next year. Just take a moment to do that now. And think big. Remember, we're leading on. Everybody got one? Okay, great. So what we're going to do now is you're going to flip the page over if you're working on one of these sheets, and if you need a sheet, there's some in the front rows. And you see on the back, it says, my current personal board of directors. So if you think about your network, if you think about who is in your network, I like to reframe that and think about it as, if you were an entrepreneur and you had a board of directors, those are the people that are going to be advisors, guides, coaches, people that help you oversee and ensure that your business is successful. These are your personal board of directors, and we're only going to list 5 of them. Now, the difference between men and women's networks is that women tend to build them just like I did. I am your typical example. Deep and narrow relationships, often with peers and subordinates. That is normal. If that's who's in your network, write that down. That is not always true for men. Men tend to have much broader networks, but that's not always the case. So write down the names of the 5 people you would call who are currently in your network. These can be former bosses, former colleagues, current bosses or colleagues. It could be a personal friend. It can be a family member, spouse, partner, whatever. Just write down 5 names, just briefly, okay? If you're having trouble coming up with 5, stretch a bit. Maybe your neighbor, maybe your sister or brother. Does everybody have 5? Yes? Nod your heads if you've got the 5 so I know to move on. Yes. Okay, good. Okay. Now, normally I ask for 10, but I've often heard people say, I only have 5 or 7, so we're going to go with 5 to make it go a little quicker. Okay. The next question that you see here is, will the people who are your current board of directors, or as I put it here, on your map, your network map, assist you in achieving your business goal and career aspirations? So take a look at those 5 people's names. And now I'm going to ask you to assess, if you go back to what you hope to achieve, will those 5 people, can those 5 people help you achieve it? Anybody? So I hear one person nod. I see one person nodding no. Every room that I do this in, there are a lot of people who say, oh, I love these people, even if it's 10 or 15, but they will not help me achieve my goals. Yes. So the question is, are these people in your, when I say your personal board of directors, they can be people in your current job, in a prior job, people from home, from your social network, from your business network. They can be your boss. They can be colleagues. They can be anyone. But they're the people who, the reason I call them your personal board of directors, they're your go-to people when you have a thorny issue. So when I heard that I didn't get the job and what happened to me and I went home and cried, these would be the people I would have called and said, what do I do now? Do I try and convince them otherwise that I should get the job? Do I stay? Do I leave? What should I do? Those are people you go to for advice. They're your go-to kind of people. So that's why I call them your personal board of directors. So the first question is, raise your hand if your personal board of directors are the right people to help you achieve your career goal. Raise your hand. Okay, maybe 1/2 of you. Those of you who don't have the right people, big opportunity. I didn't have the right people, and I recognized it. Even if you do have the right people, what I would suggest is that there are probably additional people that you can add to give you a boost. Now, I've done this workshop all over Silicon Valley for sure, and in other parts of the world, in Europe and it's Asia and Canada and the U.S., and everyone from a CEO to an administrative assistant has found that when you do some analysis of who's in your current network and the strength of relationships of the people in your network, there's always room for improvement. And every time I go back and revisit mine, there's always opportunities. So let me just ask you one or two questions about your network. If you have a network that will support you in achieving your goals, let me ask you this. Is your network diverse? Do you have both men and women in your network? Yes. No. Some people might say, well, I tend to have more women or I tend to have more men. Do you have a high degree of trust of everyone in your network? This is where women often say, well, of course I wouldn't put them in my network if I didn't trust them. And I will tell you that that might be another one of those differences between the way men build their networks and women. Because men often recognize that sometimes you need someone in your network who you don't immediately trust, but you're going to build trust with them over time, and they could be instrumental in you achieving your career goals. And women recognize that as well. So what you have in front of you is an opportunity to add to your network people who can help you achieve your career goals. And that opportunity starts in every group that you're in. Let me ask you another question. Are most of the people who are in your network, if they work with you, so look at your network, look at the five names, if they work with you, do they work in your department? Raise your hand if they mainly, of those who work with you, if they're in your department. Okay. If they work with you, do you have people who work outside your department in your network? Raise your hand. Okay, a good showing. So it's important that you not limit your network to people who work in your immediate area. I've had folks in engineering who say, everyone in my network is in engineering. They understand me. They speak my language. That doesn't always help you. If you need help in doing something with finance, you might want someone in your network from finance. So you want your network to have diversity, men and women, diversity of age, diversity of geography. Is everyone in your network in the same geography? Yes? No? Does anyone have someone in your network in a totally different geography outside your area? Yes, good. Your networks are pretty good, pretty diverse. How many people in your network are people at least two levels above you if you're an employee at a corporation? Good. So the other thing to look at your network is they're going to play different roles. We heard a little bit about having a sponsor and the importance of having sponsorship. Do you have someone in your network who you think of not as a mentor but as a sponsor? Raise your hand if you have someone who you think of will go out of their way to advocate for you, open doors, introduce you to people. Great. Now raise your hand if you have more than one person in your network who will do that for you. Good. Not quite as many, but good. Again, lesson learned from my falling down was my biggest advocate left the company. I was left with no real advocates championing me. Once she left, I had to start over. And frankly, I wasn't willing to do that because I already knew my career path was thwarted. So I had to go in another direction. How many of you work in a corporate setting? Okay, good. So in corporate settings, in most corporations, they do talent review sessions. Are you familiar with the talent review process? Most of you are nodding your head, yes. So in the talent review process, Having been a talent officer, I'm familiar with this one, a little too familiar. What they do is they put a name forward. So let's say I'm putting forward Cynthia's name. I'm picking on someone in the crowd here that I know. So I'm putting forward Cynthia's name, and I'm saying, Cynthia reports to me. She's a high potential employee, or as they call them, high pots. Cynthia's a high pot. I want to put her name on the table for a big opportunity, either a big visibility project or a high profile project or a promotion. Now, when I put Cynthia's name on the table, the other leaders around the room chime in and say, oh, I know Cynthia. She's fantastic. She does a great job. Or they say, I had an experience with Cynthia that wasn't so good. Or Cynthia's leadership is spot on in this area, but not so good in that area. Or someone on my team worked with Cynthia, has nothing but good things to say about him. Or I talk about Cynthia and no one around the table says a word because no one knows her. You know what happens when that takes place? Yeah, you're shaking your head. When no one else knows Cynthia, she doesn't get that high profile assignment because she has no visibility. So the other important piece of this network building outside of your sphere of people you already know is that when your name, let's say you're a super performer, when your name gets put forward in the talent review, if nobody knows you and can speak to your strengths, even though you're the top performer in your team or in your group, because no one else knows you, you go sort of to the bottom of the pile. You're the well-kept secret. So you need those advocates out there around the table saying, oh, someone on my team spoke very highly of Cynthia. She worked with her or he worked with her and said this and this about. The more people, the longer the conversation goes about Cynthia and more positive it is, the higher she rises to the top, the more likely she is to get the next promotion or the next big visibility project. So if your network does not include people who will be going to things like talent reviews and speak up on your behalf, your work will not stand alone for you. You will be missing out on getting those next big opportunities. Because even though we're in the driver's seat as women in terms of being hired, in order to rise through the ranks, we need a lot of advocates around those talent tables. So let's just think now about who you might want to add to your map. Think of, and I would recommend that you add at least two people to your map. And the way we're going to do that today, because we have limited time, is each of you is going to come up with something that you're very good at. Maybe what you're good at is, I know a lot about the company where I work, or maybe I'm really good at business development, or I'm really good at project management, or I'm really good at whatever it is you're good at, okay? So can everybody here come up with something you're really good at? Everybody? When you have it in your mind, nod. Okay, good. So let's assume that there's great talent in this room because you're all really good at something. So what we're going to do now, use the last few minutes. How many people did you meet at the conference so far? Did everybody meet anybody? Some yes, some no. Okay, so here we're going to meet a few people in the room right now. So what you're going to do is you're all going to get up, and we're going to use the aisles, and you're going to meet at least four new people. You're going to use one of the, remember we heard earlier this morning about, oh no, never mind. That wasn't this morning, it was in a breakout session. We're going to meet four different people. You're going to go up, you're going to introduce yourself, and it's going to be as quick as this. Hi, I'm Marilyn. I'm great at instructional design. And then you say your name.
Hi, I'm Laura. Great at analytics.
Great at analytics. Okay? Then if you have a card with you, we might exchange cards. and then we're going to do it with three more people, then you're going to sit down. Is everybody ready to do that? Okay? Begin. Go meet three people, four in total. Now, did everybody meet at least two people? Did you get to four? Okay, good. All right, now, did you hear anything from someone that you think, oh, I'd like to spend more time with that person? Yes. Did you get their card or their name or anything? You got their name. Okay. So, imagine if we had spent just a little more time doing this, how quickly you could assess that there might be people right here, right now, that you would want to spend more time with getting to know. Maybe you'd want to add them to your network because maybe they come from a company that you've always wanted to find out more about. The way that I got my job at Cisco was I was teaching a class. And there was a guy sitting in the front row, and he said to me that he worked at Cisco. And I said, you know, I've always wanted to know what Cisco's doing because you do a lot with e-learning, and I've heard you have this great reputation. Let's stay in touch via email. I was on the East Coast. He was on the West Coast. Now, you can't tell that I have an East Coast accent, can you? No, I didn't think so. Okay. And so we stayed in touch, and then he contacted me and said, my boss is leaving. Would you be interested in applying for the job? You just never know. There are people in this room that work for the company that will be your next job. You just don't know. Or will be your next client if you are an entrepreneur, or be the next person that you want to have lunch with just to form a new friendship. You just don't know. So it doesn't take a lot of time, but it takes getting out of your comfort zone. It takes being a little bit risky and now for some of you, this is just normal stuff. You do this all the time, and there's a lot of good network builders in this room. But for some of us, like me, this is not necessarily my natural inclination. So I push myself to do this, to work at meeting new people and getting connections and making them authentic connections, not just opportunistic, really authentic connections. And for me, as it is for many, many women, what works best is if I can offer them something. Because then I know that if I can offer you something, then I feel good about building the relationship. I feel like I have something to offer. Most of us get great value out of contributing. And so if we can contribute to others, that's a win for us, but it's also a wonderful way to contribute to someone else in the world. So if you've got two names in the room that you want to connect back with, then write those two people's names down on your list. But if not, what I'd like you to do is put down, in addition to those, two people that you would like to add to your list. Just from this little snippet about your network and helping you reach your goals through your network, who would be the best person to help you reach your goal that you could add to your network? You don't have to know them. You just have to say who it is. Has everybody got that direction? Write down the two names of people, and then, just to keep you honest, when will you reach out to them? Because this is not, if you were going to do it naturally, you would have done it already. So I'm going to be a little bit pushy, and I'm going to say the name of the person and when I'm going to reach out to them. So this week, I'm going to send them an email inviting them to get together for coffee. Or next week, I'm going to send them an email and see if they would be willing to have a phone conversation, whatever it is. So two people you're going to add. You can also put in two people that you met here or four people that you met here that seemed interesting you'd like to follow up with. All right? Just write that down now, but write it down so that you're really going to do it. Meet someone that you really wish you had gotten their card from or their name. You just heard that it was Susie, but you didn't get any more detail. Anybody that happened to? Yes? Do you want to just get up? Just get up, be bold, and go over to the person. And are they here? Oh, they're not here. Oh, darn. Okay. So that's what typically happens to us. Remember, we heard what happened, and I think Secretary Clinton said this. You hear something often, and you say, I wish I had said something, but when you go home, you're like, darn it, I wish I had said something. The other missed opportunity that we often have is you meet someone, you think, gee, I wish I would have exchanged information with that person. I would love to get more information. I'd love to get together and follow up with them, and we don't do it. And why? Because we're shy, or because we don't want to impose on them, or we think they're too busy, or what have you. Remember I said that I used to network very heavily with the 240 or so people that reported to me? I had plenty of time for them, but when I was meeting with an SVP, I always thought they were too busy to spend time with me, and I didn't want to waste their time. So I'd get in, go over the agenda, and get out. But in reality, that's why they thought I was snobbish, because I didn't spend the time saying, oh, I see you just went skiing because you have a skiing picture on your desk, or, you know, I heard you talk about your favorite nonprofit at the all-hands meeting, and I actually have a strong interest in saving animals also, or whatever it is. I never made those connections. I didn't take the time, and they don't take long. I thought I didn't have time. I didn't go to lunch. I didn't have time. I didn't go to coffee. I didn't have time. In reality, not making the time bit me in the butt. So, so does everybody have at least two names? All right. What are you going to do? What's the plan? Oh, Monday, 10 a.m. You've already got it scheduled. Fantastic. Anybody else? Anybody have a plan in mind? Great, you're going to call her. I saw a hand up back here, someone else. You're going to plan a dinner with someone and increase both of your networks. What a great idea. If two people get together and say, let's share, I'm willing to open up my network to you, and you might be willing to open up. You know, if I share my goal and you share your goal, maybe I know some people who can help you and you know some people who can help me. The way that this works, and I typically do an activity called asks and offers. Each person says, here's what I'm asking for, and here's what I'm willing to offer. The way that it works is if there's no one in the room who's willing to offer it, we go to the second degree of separation. So if you don't know someone who could help you, maybe someone else knows someone who could help you. And we're all people who are willing to contribute and lend that helping hand, lend that lifting hand. So if we're willing to do that for one another, we're geometrically exploding. If there's 75 people in the room, that's 75 people times 5, because you've got 5 people in your network. Doesn't mean you're opening up your network to every single person in the room. We're not asking you to do that, but it just means maybe you want an introduction. I used to say, because we started planning for this conference over a year ago, anybody have a connection to Secretary Hillary Clinton? Because that's who I want to be the keynote at Watermark's first conference. Every time I did this workshop, I would ask that question. And you know what? There were a few people who had connections to connections. They didn't all say, oh, she's my first cousin, but there were people who had connections who said, well, here's who you might try, so-and-so, and it was another voice to help make it happen. And it was pretty bold. It wasn't like a little ask of, do you know an executive at, you know, Genentech or Intel? It was Secretary Clinton. So look, think big, think bold, and then just start asking. If you don't ask, you're not going to get it. But if you ask, what's the worst that can happen? People say, I don't know. I don't know them. And do you know anybody who might know them? One workshop, I was doing this, and someone said they wanted a female volleyball player. It had nothing to do with the topic. I don't know why, but no one in the room, there were 150 people there, no one knew a female volleyball, no one was a female volleyball player. So I said, does anybody know of a female volleyball player? And immediately there were 10 people who said, I can introduce you to a female volleyball player. And so I said, would you mind making the introduction to this person who wants a female volleyball player. They said, sure, what do we care? You know, I mean, how hard is that? And isn't it nice when you make a connection to someone and it works out well and it fulfills a need? So if you're all willing to do that, it doesn't take a lot of time. It doesn't take a lot of energy. No one is asking you to be their sponsor or their mentor and meet with them once a week. We're simply saying, would you be willing to make an introduction or see if you could help me and I can help you? And that's what it's about in terms of the start of building a really robust network. It's also about having the courage to say, this is what I'm about. This is what my goal is. First, it's about putting it on paper and saying, I'm getting out on the skinny limbs saying I'm really going for this. And then it's about saying, would you be willing to help me? And once you make that declaration, it's amazing how many people are willing to step up and help you. I started a new business after retiring from Watermark, and I just started putting the word out and saying, this is what I'm going to do, and if anybody has ideas, I've got somebody who helped me do copywriting, someone who helped me with my website, somebody. I mean, people have just... Now, what I've been told is that I've been helping people for a long time and making connections for them. And that may be true because I like to do that, as do all of you. But it's also that people get a real lift out of making a difference. And if they can help me in a short-term way, they're willing to do it. So allow people to contribute to you. Most of us, and this is a particularly true thing for women, is on the downside, we don't like to ask for help because we don't want to impose. And we'd rather suck it up. You know, it's the old story about how if you have to ask twice, would you take out the trash to your kid, you'll say, never mind, I'll do it myself. And I used to be that way. But I learned that it's better to let people help you and then acknowledge them for helping you. Because why not let people make a contribution? Because we all feel good about contributing. And I've now learned that that is a much more generous way to go through life. It is more generous to allow people to be of service to me, not just me be of service to them. So the bad news is we have trouble asking for help. The good news is network building your network has to be a win-win, and we all are willing to donate and give. So that's a good characteristic that women bring to the party. So the last piece is, do you need an introduction, and who could help with that? So think about that. What do you have to offer? We've already talked about that. And what are you asking of this person? Be specific and time-bound if possible. There are people who have said to me, would you be willing to open your network to me? And my answer to that at this point is you need to be more specific what you're looking for and who you, if you say, I would like to meet, you know, Joe Smith, I am happy to, for the purpose of, then I'm willing to make an introduction. Am I willing to open up my network that might be thousands of people and send a note on your behalf? No, I'm not your business development arm. But if you're very specific about what you want and it's time-bound, then people almost always are either willing to help or say, I can't do it right now, but can I do it in a month? I'm just swamped right now. So be specific and make it time-bound, and then let people be of service and let them get the good feeling of being of service. So I'm just going to ask if there are any open questions, and then we're going to wrap up. It's our last few minutes. Yes. Do you want to step up to the mic so everyone can hear?
Okay, Marilyn, we're supposed to network upward. What do we typically have to offer two levels up? Because that's the hard part.
Ah, what did you say you were really good at?
I am good at troubleshooting network problems and solving puzzles.
Solving puzzles.
Yeah.
Well, it's not like executives don't have puzzles to solve. Puzzles are simply thorny problems.
Right.
Here's another one that almost all of you, there's one man here and one man here, and there's a third man here. But the rest of you women in the room, mostly predominantly women, have to offer almost every executive. Almost every executive is struggling with the problem about women attracting and retaining qualified women and understanding this whole gender challenge, particularly in Silicon Valley, but everywhere. What you have to offer is support of a woman who understands a woman's perspective and issues that are important to women. Not as a complainer, but as a problem solver, a solver of puzzles. So that's what you have to offer. The other thing is, you know, we live in an age of social media. You hear an executive talk at an all-hands meeting. That's the executive you want in your network for a variety of reasons, okay? Look them up on LinkedIn. Look them up on Facebook. It's public, right? You find out, oh, they are on the board of a nonprofit that you know, and or their child's school or whatever. Or they go hiking, or they're a long-distance runner, or whatever it is. See what you have. You know, I heard you talk at the all-hands meeting about this issue. I thought of something that might be of help to you. You're a problem solver. That be a problem solver for them. Go in with solutions, not complaints. But I think we all have, and this came out at a couple of firms, law firms, where we did this workshop. It would be great for senior partners to understand what issues the more junior people are faced with or why they can't recruit more women. It would be great for senior male executives to understand your perspective and how to enhance the experience of women employees where you work in a positive way, not in a demanding or negative way, but in a way that you're there to serve and help. Right there, you have something wonderful to offer. You have the women's perspective, if it's a male. If it's a female, you have other things to offer. Yes. If you don't mind, or I'll repeat it. Yes. Well, at the Watermark booth, there is a technology that Watermark offers its members called EnQuotient, which is a wonderful aggregator that takes your LinkedIn, your Facebook, your other network people, and it aggregates it, and it even gives you little reminders of how often, maybe every 6 months, I need to ping this person and just send them a note. Maybe I don't need to ping this person but once a year. Maybe this one's every 3 months. Because if you don't maintain your network, it will die out. One of the things I noticed in my network is I lose touch with people, and so I needed to re-engage with folks. But I think you can carve out very little amounts of time, and it doesn't have to be after work. It can be during work. You just say twice a week during work, I'm going to go, if you're in a work environment where there's a cafe, I'm going to go to coffee with someone to reinforce or build my network. Just want to catch up. 20-minute meeting, twice, maybe once a week or every other week. If it's a call, it's a check-in call, 20 minutes, just want to check in with you, see how things are going. And you schedule it based on each person and what you think that it, some people can go 6 months and you don't, or a year, and you don't need to keep checking in with them because it's the kind of relationship that's sort of self-sustaining. So you need to think about it each one. But you can use a tool like EnQuotient, and you can find out through the Watermark booth about it. And they'll give you ticklers and reminders and all this wonderful stuff. Yes.
If time permits, I'd like to ask two questions. The first question is, can you comment a little bit about how is it that men can build wide but shallow network and women tend to be narrow and deep in the context of time? My personal problem is, yes, I network and I meet people. I quickly figure out what it is that I can do for them, and I'm immediately on LinkedIn or whatever it is, and I get it done. So when that transaction is over, unless there's a real compelling reason to keep on furthering developing the relationship, which I do sometimes, but the bottom line is I've filtered out all the broad ones, and I've now focused my remaining time on the deep ones.
Right. Well, the reason we do it differently, typically, and again, this is a generalization, but the reason women do it differently is we want to build more meaningful, deep relationships versus a lighter surface relationship. Now, there's nothing wrong with focusing on deeper relationships, but you're not going to do that as broadly. So you might want to think of it as spheres of influence or tiers. They're going to be your deep relationship people, and then they're going to be larger spheres. But if you only stick with your deep relationships, you're going to be missing out. I will tell you, there's the plus and the minus of the LinkedIn connection. You know, I can't even tell you how many connections I have on LinkedIn. I probably get 4 or 5 requests a week, and I have just realized I say yes to everyone mistakenly, because now I've learned that that is not a good thing to do. But when I was as CEO of Watermark, I just didn't have the time to, I was just say yes, 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 yes. But it doesn't, that's not a relationship. So having a connection on LinkedIn doesn't really mean anything unless I deepen it at least a little bit. Men spend more time on it for 2 reasons. One is, and one guy in a workshop said to me, we're more opportunistic. I said, well, that could be, and that probably is. But the second thing is they don't have the same commitments at home with kids, elder care, family responsibilities. And the other thing is they leverage their social time. So golf course, those people are in their network. They use their, whereas we don't always think of that as women. We don't think of the women who are doing carpool pickup at school or what have you as potential network people that could add to our network. So they use their leisure time to add to their business network more strategically than we do. If we go to the gym for a class, we're not looking around that class saying, oh, who here might be, you know, it's not the same as a golf game. So did you have a second question? Because we're yes. Almost ready to wrap up. Yes.
A couple years ago, the startup I joined was purchased by a publicly held company. The CEO and the SVP who made the purchase of my startup arranged for a lunch with like 5 of us. But it's a small startup, right? Okay. I knew the purpose of the lunch was the public company was trying to get to know us better, but I had no idea what to do afterwards, right? So the lunch happened, our 2 co-founders were there, and then the 3 of us who work for the co-founders were there. We kind of had a superficial lunch that didn't result in any kind of connection. Hindsight is always 20/20. What would you have advised if somebody came to you and described this scenario, and what should one have done?
Follow up with it. Well, that's where you do use something like LinkedIn. You send them a note on LinkedIn saying, we met at this luncheon. I missed out the opportunity to get your card and have a follow-up coffee with you. I think there's some things I would like to learn from you. I use the word love all the time, but I've been working in a women's organization too long. You have to be careful where you use that word when it's mixed gender. But there's we only had a few minutes to chat over lunch. I'd like to connect with you on LinkedIn and maybe schedule coffee sometime to understand a little bit more about your work. Then a missed opportunity becomes a real opportunity. Now when I meet people, I immediately follow up, connect with them on LinkedIn, but also send them a personal note. It's not just, would you like to connect? Because would you like to connect is, meh, you know.
That one's a little awkward because we work in the same building. Okay, then, once we got bought. Right?
Then let's get coffee. You know, we had that luncheon a while ago. We never really got to know each other. I'd like to know more about what you do. I'd like to shadow you. Why don't we women take advantage of that? Men invite themselves to meetings all the time. Ask if you could sit in on a meeting and learn more about his department or what he's doing. Just like to get a flavor for what your group does. Could I sit in on one of your meetings? Could we have coffee to learn more about what you're doing? What's wrong with that? And if he says no, big deal. He says no. Then try the next one. But you can turn those missed opportunities into opportunities. You don't have to go through LinkedIn if you're in the same building.
The awkwardness is the CEO and the senior vice president who bought your company, right? So you're, what you're worried about is they bought your co-founder.
So what?
Along with the staff. So you, it's, it doesn't seem
Here's
appropriate.
The thing. Here's the thing. We, women, this is the difference between men and women. Men will go to the CEO and also learn from millennials. Millennials in the room have no compunction about going right to the CEO and saying, can we have lunch? Really. They're just like, what's the deal? They're people. They're just people. Just because they have a big title doesn't mean anything. So you still have to offer what you have to offer, whether it's the CEO or anyone. One workshop I was doing, people said, well, I wouldn't want to ask him to go to lunch. And someone else said, you know what? He's very shy and he always eats alone because no one ever invites him to lunch. He would welcome it. So my point to you is stop being stymied. Men won't be stymied by it's the CEO. It's the CEO you had lunch with. We had lunch a while ago. I'd really like to learn more about your direction for or what you did or your or just ask a smart question and go have coffee. Coffee is time-bound 20 minutes. Just go for coffee. Tea, whatever works for you. I used to say go for coffee. People would say go for coffee. I'd say, I don't drink coffee, as though that's a reason, you know, really. But literally, I don't drink coffee. So I thought, oh, I can't. I don't drink coffee. Any excuse because I was embarrassed about being too pushy. I would say be pushy and then be a little more pushy and then you can back off. But get out there and try. It's what we heard from Brené Brown. If you don't get in the arena, nothing's going to happen. Get in the arena. Go for tea with the CEO. Last question. I'll repeat. And I'd go to, all right, so the thing is if you followed up with them twice and they don't get back to you, I'd try someone else and let them go. That would be me. Others, I will tell you, when I worked at Cisco, I had a guy try and invite himself to a meeting because I was organizing it with the CEO. And I said, no, it's for these other people. He said, okay. And then he showed up at the meeting. So, and you know what? I said to him, you know, this isn't going to be for you another time, but no. I mean, what's the worst that can happen? We're so afraid of rejection. What's the worst? I mean, don't be a pest or a stalker, but, but if you've tried, the other thing is go through the admin. And the key for the admin is give the admin respect. If you give the admin respect and say, I need 20 minutes, that's all I'm looking for, I think I can be of help, the admin, who is the gatekeeper, will let you in the door. With that, I know I'm out of time. I want to say thank you for your patience. This has been a very long day, and it's gone even longer than we anticipated. I'm so delighted to have been with all of you in this last hour, and I challenge you, go out, make your mark, build your network, get in the arena, lead on. And if you want to connect with me on LinkedIn, no, I'm just kidding.